She's gone to the movies, and she don't need your help. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. We're talking about movies, and why are we talking about movies? Because we have in the studio with us a special guest, Dr. Maria Grace. Maria Grace, who I've heard about for a long time through a number of friends, has developed a system of study that involves the movies.
Yes.
Maria, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me, Maria, how do people, the name of the book is called Real Fulfillment, F-U-L-F-I-L-L-M-E-N-T, and it's about a 12-step plan for kind of transforming your life using movies. Now, movies, I know, are an escape and entertainment. This we know.
Mm-hmm.
But you say, oh, no, there's a greater depth to it.
Yes, there is. And let me tell you how this whole method began. It began 9 years ago in my office. I was at the time researching the power of myths to teach people lessons about life and prepare them for the next stage of life. I'm originally from Greece, so I had this fortune of being raised with mythology. And I was at the time using myths with my clients and also in seminars. And everybody was enjoying them and having a good time and getting the lessons from the myths. But I listened more carefully to my clients, and I found out that they were all talking about movies and what movies, especially what movie characters, were doing for them. They were some of my clients were identifying with movie characters' problems. Some others were being inspired by movie characters' ability to transform, to overcome obstacles. I had a client.
Give me an example of those. Yes, you're going to do that just now.
I had a client who was, in fact, she had a huge crush on George Clooney, and she would refer to his movies every time she would talk to me about her intimacy problems, her relationships. I had another client.
Oh, wait, let's go a little further. She had a crush on George Clooney, and you're saying that by using the information you got to her reference to the movies with George Clooney,
mm-hmm.
you would help her discover things about herself?
Yes.
Give me an example of that.
And I want to get to that. And then I had this one client who was in love with Star Wars, and he would refer to Star Wars, to Yoda and to Skywalker. This particular client I sent to see The Matrix. This particular person was very unmotivated, very unfulfilled, and he was a computer whiz, and The Matrix was just out, and I said, why don't you go see The Matrix? This particular client comes back the following week. He sits down. He says, Maria, there is no spoon. I said, what are you talking about? There is no spoon, he said. There is no spoon. I got it. There is no spoon. He was referring to the scene of The Matrix in which Neo, and for those of us who have seen The Matrix, we know that Neo is the main character. He's a computer hacker. He's unfulfilled. He lives in a world in a dead end, and then he gets this mission to transform his life, or to transform the world, rather. All this is a metaphor about the journey of personal transformation. And he goes to the Oracle to ask her whether he is indeed the one, which in all myths of all time is the refusal to the call, the initial resistance. Shall I do this? Shall I not? And outside the oracle chamber, there is this little boy who bends spoons using his mind. So Neo looks at the boy and he says, how do you do that? And the boy looks at him and says, it's very simple. There is no spoon. Something about that scene got my client. And as he explained it afterwards to me, it was that he saw that all the obstacles that he was perceiving as being external were in fact projections of his inner fears, projections of his inner self-talk, projections of his inner negative thoughts out to the world. And all came together for him in that particular scene. And that day, he became really motivated to make significant changes in his life. And from that point on, our work together really transformed.
Let's go back to the George Clooney thing.
Another client had ongoing intimacy problems, and in fact, she is in the chapters in Real Fulfillment, and she had this ongoing crush on George Clooney. After a very bad breakup that she had that completely devastated her, I taught her to talk to George Clooney as her inner mentor. And therefore, she was able to, A, transform this crush that she had on George Clooney, that she was fantasizing about him. She wanted to be his girlfriend. She wanted to go out to Los Angeles and meet him. I mean, she had a really full-blown obsession. She learned how to transform that into an inner dialogue with the image of George Clooney as her inner mentor. And write about that inner dialogue. And over time, George Clooney became her advisor. And he started giving her advice how to be a more powerful woman, a more self-assured woman, and how to interact with men. And this is in the chapter of creative imagination, of use creativity and how to invoke creative imagination. And, you know, all this obsession that we think we have with movie actors, it's not in fact with movie actors. I think it's with movie characters. And they take on a life of their own inside our imagination. And therefore, the method in Real Fulfillment helps people transform this, I want to say meaningless, or this obsession that they don't really know what to do with it, into something meaningful, into something that can give them something to do with.
So I think what you're saying is like a little like working with dreams. If you work with the images that a person projects from what they see in the movies, and you can actually use the movies to unfold a part of a person to themselves.
Yes.
And that what most people do is they see a movie and they kind of tuck it away, you know? And they see it's a beautiful life and they say, oh, I see that every Christmas. But they don't understand there's something about Zuzu's Petals, or there's something about the Pottersville, or there's something about each of the characters. You know, they may identify with any one of a number of the characters. Like if you're a George Clooney movie, mm-hmm. you could be his lover, or you could be George Clooney himself.
Yes, I agree with you.
Now, do you think that mostly when a person identifies with a movie so strongly that they are more than one character in the movie?
We can identify with everything
every
in a movie.
Part.
A movie is, in fact, in many aspects, much more powerful than a dream, because in the dream, our ego is unconscious. We are asleep. We're passive. We're just watching the dream. Sometimes we remember it. Sometimes we don't. In the movie, we are in the dream. We're alive. We're interacting with it. And in using technology, we can replay the dream. We can fast forward. We can back it up if we watch the movie at home. And so everything about a movie can get into our psyche, or can grab a part of our psyche, and we can identify with, from the characters to the colors, the cinematography, the music sometimes, the costumes. And so when we work with film as part of inspiring inspiring you to become a better person, or become a more self-assured person, or change a habit that you have that is not good for you, then it all depends on you. So I always ask the person, what is this that they liked about this particular film? What is this about this particular character they identify with or they don't identify with? Another interesting thing about identification with characters is whether, you know, sometimes we love characters in a movie and sometimes we hate them. The characters that we hate can teach us a lot more about ourselves than the characters we identify with, because those represent the hidden the aspects of ourselves that we do not really want to accept as part of our personality. So we project them out there on the character and we say, I hated him. I hated her. And so it's a really nice way to come back.
So by looking, by having somebody like you who doesn't take idle conversation about a movie as idle conversation, you can see many things. You can see. Now, you say you start with, I think you, in our earlier conversation, you said you start with a fantasy. How do you work with starting with a fantasy?
Yes. The fantasy is the first part of this. Everybody who comes into consultation or psychotherapy or coaching, however you want to call it, to me, in my practice, everybody who wants help is at a point of wanting to go through a transformation. I mean, this is what life is all about. We go from one point of being to another, and that's a transformation. And not everybody really knows what they want to do. And this is the most fun person to work with, because I always ask them about what they fantasize about. And this is the very first truth that we discover. So we start with the fantasies, and depending on what the fantasy is, I then teach the person how to make sense of the fantasy. You asked me earlier about a very interesting fantasy. You gave me a very interesting example. Do you want to repeat it, Armand?
Well, no. It was just a particular man that I was with. Actually, it was a woman I was with who said that she had a fantasy of wanting to be with a whole bunch of men at once sexually.
Okay.
And that was where it was, and she, and that was her fantasy. Now, you had a very interesting approach to it, because I liked what you had to say about it. Not, you know, this is not about sex.
Well, I would ask this person about their real life. I would ask, first of all, I would ask how the fantasy makes them feel, because every fantasy is an inner movie that has as its purpose to invoke powerful emotions in us. Then if I ask the person, okay, how does your fantasy make you feel? They will say, it makes me feel powerful. It makes me feel acknowledged. It makes me feel beautiful. It makes me feel in control. It makes me feel part of a community. I mean, all those would-be feelings that this particular woman that you're referring to is having when she's fantasizing about having sex with seven men. Then I would ask this woman, how is she or is she not experiencing those feelings in her real life? I would go into her real life and say, okay, what do you do? And then 9 out of 10 times, if not 10 out of 10, this person would say, well, no, I do not feel powerful, and I do not feel part of a community, and I do not feel acknowledged, and I do not feel beautiful. I need attention. And then we would work together about how what she can do in her real life to get the real attention in reality, to feel powerful really in reality, instead of her escaping into a fantasy world and or chasing the fantasy in reality. Because what happens many times is that we think that if we pursue a fantasy in reality, that's exactly what we need. And many times we do it and we find out that it has, in fact, detrimental results. Now, where do movies come in to this? I would ask this person to watch movies that show how characters pursue the fantasy in real life.
Do you pick the movies?
There are different ways to do that. I ask the person what kind of movies they like. I ask, I have some films in mind because I always research the film, and I recommend.
What films do you like to work with the most that people can project best onto?
I will ask each client what movies they like. And I would first ask them to go see the movies that they have seen already. This is the safest and best way to start.
Go back to see a movie that you've already seen that you've really touched you in some way. You know?
Correct. And give them the rules, how to watch a movie. Because watching
what are the
rules? The rules are, watch for changes in you as you're watching the movie. Watch for scenes that make you feel something. notice what you feel, and if you can, stop the movie and make note of it. Notice for the characters that you really feel strongly for, whether that's a powerful for or against, make a note of that. Notice if there are parts of the movie that are hard to watch and what those are. And bring all this information here. And notice, in fact, where you wanted to just not even watch the movie. And notice for parts of the movie that stick in your memory and you replay them afterwards. And bring those things back to me and let's work with them together.
So replaying, let me just get this in. Thank you very much for all the information. My guest, by the way, is Dr. Maria Grace, who's a Canadian Greek American psychologist specialist, ego
consultant.
Ego consultant. Hey, you know, Maria, just to finish this, so when a person watches a movie, you tell them go back and watch a movie that they watch. But now I've got to ask you about your favorites. I want to know, what are your favorite movies to send people to that tend to engender the most projection? Which ones do you think?
When I work with women, when I work with women ages 25 to 65, I show them Shirley Valentine. Shirley Valentine is the story of a woman who transformed her life by going to Greece. She had this fantasy. It's a textbook movie of how to follow a fantasy, only to find out that you do not really transform your life by pursuing a fantasy. You transform your life by taking actions to make real changes. But the fantasy is just the carrot, or it's just the beginning. And so she's a housewife, a homemaker, who lives in Liverpool and goes to Greece. She has this fantasy of drinking wine in watching the sunset by the sea in a country where the grape grows. And a few weeks later, she finds herself in Greece by the sea, drinking that wine, watching the sunset, and yet she's really unhappy. She's still unhappy. And then throughout the film, she finds out that in order for her to find her happiness, she has to reclaim herself. And in order to do that, she has to make some changes, some real life changes. And not only that, but she sticks to her changes. She does not let her environment pull her back through guilt or through intimidation or through all other tactics. And she sticks to that. Women love watching scenes or clips from that film and in that film as well.
Sounds like
and
the story of your life.
The story
it is
of
the
my
story of your life.
Well,
that's what you did. You did it the opposite way.
I did it the
Greece,
opposite
right?
way, yeah. I had a dream about being interviewed by Armand Demel and in New York City when I was 12, which is when I decided I was going to become a psychologist.
Right.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Here we are.
And so you traveled across the country. You wound up in Canada. You wound up in Greece. You wound up all
in
over
California,
the place.
Yes. In California, yes. And here we are.
You know, I want to get to the scar grid, because there's something about that that's so profound. Are we skipping too fast to get to it?
Maybe a little.
Okay, we're gonna lead to it, because I think you've developed something here that's quite something. Let's go on to the other movies.
The other movies are Under the Tuscan Sun, again for women. It's a more recent film, and it's again about a woman who goes through a terrible divorce. It's based on real facts. Through a terrible divorce, finds herself in Tuscan, Italy, and buys a villa, a decrepit villa, which she renovates using her own means and not knowing Italian. And the whole film, again, is a metaphor. The villa becomes herself, and she renovates the home. And the movie starts with her having three fantasies. She says, I want to have a wedding in this house. I want to see children in this house. And I want to raise a family in this house. And she thinks that her fantasies are going to be fulfilled literally, that she's going to get married again. She's going to raise children. She's going to have a family. And she's going to cook. Throughout the film, we see that all her fantasies do come true, but in a way that life wants to fulfill them. She does have a wedding, which is a wedding of two very dear friends of hers. She does raise a child, which is another friend of hers who comes with her child. And she does cook, and she cooks for her neighbors and the people who work for her. And eventually, after she finds her wholeness, then she finds the guy, too. Now, this, again, is a film that I always show in my, and I recommend my clients and show in my seminars, because, again, it's textbook transformation process, where the house, the villa becomes the metaphor for the person, for the ego, for the self. Well, for men...
How do you know, though? How do you know? We're going to get to that in a minute. How do you know when a person's fantasy is just... compensation, trying to compensate for something that they have to, they feel inadequate about. And so they're fantasizing being Superwoman, you know, or being Catwoman. And you say, well, there it is. You want to feel powerful. So what is it about your life that you don't feel powerful about? So is it sometimes people's attraction to characters in the movies are really escapes from the pain of realization of who they really are?
You know, I don't necessarily agree that it hurts to realize what we are. What hurts is the things that we do pretending we're someone we're not.
Okay.
That is what really hurts. So we fall again and again and again into the same traps by repeating again and again and again the same patterns because we think we're someone we're not. When we accept who we really are and we integrate all parts of ourselves, it doesn't hurt anymore. We come to terms with who we are. We get to accept ourselves. We give ourselves a break. And when we accept ourselves and we give ourselves a break, we do not do things that hurt anymore because we know who we are. And we can, you know...
It seems kind of simple. Your formula is... give somebody an inspirational movie. I mean, we'll recommend Rocky to men, and we'll recommend...
Men love Rocky. Men love Rocky. And from certain parts of this country, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, because I've had interviews before with open lines, and people would call, men would call, men love Rocky. Men love Field of Dreams, too, with Kevin Costner. If you build it, he will come.
And almost everybody loves The Godfather.
And The Godfather.
Why do you think, what do you think it is about The Godfather that has such appeal to people? I mean, because on so many levels, it's such a crude, violent film. And then on another level, everybody secretly kind of loves it.
Because it combines everything that human beings have ever, have always fought, striven, right?
Good enough.
Good enough? Strived? Mm-hmm. Strived. Fought, strived, loved and hated, and died and lived for in life. It combines family, loyalty, betrayal, power, even religion, territoriality. It has themes that are as old as humanity.
Do you think, since you would recommend movies, I mean, there are so many classics that also go back. I mean, I would recommend Aristophanes, you know. I would recommend going back in time. I mean, what about Shakespearean theater?
This is how I started. I started with Greek myths, but America is the motherland of film, and films in this culture are the mythology of this culture, and they have taken over the world. So the modern mythology is our movies, I think. And there is such a plethora of films from which to choose that they're endless. And people today identify more with films and movie characters than with myths, from Greece or India. But if they watch those myths in movie, for example, 300, there are many, many myths that have become films today. Mm-hmm. It's easier to work with a person who will watch. We will watch an ancient myth in a film rather than if they have them read the myth or hear the myth.
Can I ask you, just if somebody saw Taxi Driver and they told you that that was their very favorite, most incredible movie they ever saw, would you have them address the psychopathic part of themselves?
I would ask them, what about the film they liked?
I'll answer for you.
Yes.
Well, he didn't care about anything except what he believed in. And he just wouldn't take anything from anybody. Now, of course, we're showing a classic psychopath.
Yes, in this particular case, yes. And then I would then say, okay, how does that relate to you? How does that inspire you? And if this depending on this person's grasp on reality and the consequences of the actions that they are fantasizing about taking, I would work with that person. See, the other thing about watching violent films or painful films, there is a part in us that needs to be validated through pain. And this is why violent films and gory films are so well-liked. And in my opinion, will never really go away. They're here to stay, and people will like them.
Well, what do you mean? People want to be validated through the identification of experiencing pain?
Of experiencing pain or watching violence, because we experience violence in our life on an everyday basis. I'm not talking about violence that you go to the police for. I'm talking about violence. Our ego experiences violence through competition, through being compared, through being rejected, through being, all these are different forms of violence. Now, when we watch a movie that is violent, we can identify either with the victim, the one who receives the violence and the pain, or the one who inflicts the pain. And either way, we get some sort of validation. So this particular person, back to your client who liked the taxi driver, perhaps this may be someone who in his life feels like a victim in many ways, and by watching the taxi driver, he gets this release by identifying with the taxi driver who went out on a killing spree because he just blew up.
You know, there's
And I would then assess how capable this person is of committing such acts, or if it's just, if this whole movie remains on a fantasy level for him. And it all depends on how good a grasp on reality this person has.
You have a good comment you make about the pain, because you wonder why people watch violence, and they do. They like to see violence. And I think there's a part of something about it that when you watch it, it makes you feel something. And I think what people want most of all, many people, is they feel numb. When you go to a horror movie, I wonder why people go to horror movies, but they go to feel things. They want to feel.
Horror movies are very interesting. Our ego is afraid of one thing. We're afraid of one thing, Armand.
Annihilation. Death.
Death.
Absolutely.
There is nothing else the ego is afraid of.
Spoken like a true Greek.
Death.
That's right. Thanatos.
And the service that the... Thanatos, yes. There's nothing else we're afraid of. And even love... that the ego is afraid of love, it's because it dies into love. But that's a whole other conversation. Now, back to the horror movies. We love horror movies because the ego, thrives and survives death in a horror movie. We either identify with the victim, and therefore we survive, the victim does not, or we identify with a perpetrator without consequences. And the ego loves that. The ego loves to break the rules of God without having to pay consequences. And this is the service of the movies.
We're going to take your calls, too, my friends. I'm speaking with Maria Grace, Dr. Maria Grace, author of the book Real Fulfillment. It's getting very interesting. We're talking about pain. We're going to go into thanatophobia in a couple of minutes, you know, and it doesn't escape its depth. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. I'm sure we will. It's just... Sounds like Harrison Ford should be around here somewhere. You know, Michael was having a little sing-along before. I think we should kind of join in on this one. And we're back. We're back with Maria Grace, Dr. Maria Grace, at here at WBAI 99.5 FM. We were listening to some Arabian Nights music by Aradia and DJ Zen. This is, we're talking about movies, and we're talking about how movies can be used. There are three major books that I've seen in my life about how to see personality styles in movies, you know, and it would be great if anybody studied the Enneagram. Now, you have some familiarity with the Enneagram, don't you?
Yes,
you know?
I do.
Fascinating to see, you know, what they do here in this book by Tom Condon. They kind of look at it, and they kind of look at, like L.A. Confidential or The Last Seduction, and they kind of look at it, and they look at the characters, and they talk about the character's personality type. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a great film out there called, I think, The Station Agent. Do you know that film? It's about a man who inherits a station, and it's just in the Enneagram, he's a classic five. And for people who don't know what that is, it's a Sufi form of study that's just been amazing in understanding people. My guest, Dr. Maria Grace, says that she can have people understand themselves and understand their motivation and move towards a better life by actually watching movies and assigning movies and bringing them to you, bringing their movies. I mean, you're a movie therapist.
They watch movies, and then they do things in real life.
Yes, and so what you do is you take them to translate the needs that appear out of the movies and the affection for the movies and the need that appears. Now, I told you before, imagine you have somebody who's living in severe pain, mm-hmm. who uses the movie as their only escape from the pain. They sit there at night and they watch movies, and mm-hmm. it isn't really how much the movie is, how good the movie is, but does the movie engage me long enough so I could escape my pain? Now, people sometimes do that, and you would say that even the choice of movies is worthy for personal development, even if you're just looking at whatever is on?
Well, I would not ever really recommend escaping life through movies to begin with. I think life is to be lived, not to be escaped, and we want to escape a life that is not ours. So the whole concept of real fulfillment and that uses films as tools for inspiration is to come back to our life and do what it takes for us to reclaim the life that we want to have.
Well, what if a person is in intractable pain? If somebody's sick, if somebody's dying, they'd like to come back to their lives, but
their life as they live it right now has pain. And that is their life. And accepting what is, I think, will alleviate part of the spiritual and emotional pain. And in that respect, the person will have to live just with a physical pain. The people who are in severe, inescapable pain are the people who deny what is going on. And therefore, when we deny what is going on, when we resist, rather, what we are and what is going on in our life right now, we are causing emotional and spiritual pain. And in my opinion, that's the pain that really hurts, not the physical pain. Because, you know, we are in physical pain ever since we remember ourselves. As kids, we fall, we cut our knees, we break a leg or we have bruises, it goes away, it comes back again. What really, really, really hurts, what people go to therapy and spiritual direction and coaching and transformational counseling and all that, is the emotional and spiritual pain, Armand. And you know that better than I do because you have been in this business for a lot longer than I have.
No, just a couple of years.
Yeah.
Just a couple of years. Listen, so let's go to the anatomy of the self-sabotaging pattern. And you're saying...
Talking about pain, yeah.
You're talking about self-sabotage as a basis of most pain as you see it.
Yes.
Okay, can you talk about the SCAR model?
Well, the SCAR model is a grid that I developed that is in real fulfillment. And by the way, if people want to know more about me and my book, they can visit me online at mariagrace.com. That's just, yeah.
Okay, now the SCAR model.
The SCAR model is a way to break down a self-sabotaging pattern. And a self-sabotaging pattern is something that we repeat not really knowing that we're doing it. It's called the SCAR because this is an acronym for the initials. The SCAR stands for triggering hints, which is every self-sabotaging pattern starts with a trigger. And the first thing that we must be aware of is what triggers we are reacting to. And a self-sabotaging pattern starts as a reaction, whether it's conscious or unconscious. Most of the time it's unconscious. Then that trigger elicits emotions and cognitions, which are thoughts, memories, and physical sensations. We feel something in our stomach. Then we get angry. Then we have thoughts about what to do. Then our thoughts inform actions. Before we know it, we take action on our thoughts. And the actions bring results that are all the time, or most of the time, counterproductive to our initial goal, which was to succeed in something. So once we break this pattern down and we become aware of what is going on, then we can transform it.
So you're going to have, there's always a triggering event of some sort. Then there's an emotion, a sensation, a cognition.
Yes.
Which leads to an action. So you're saying triggering hint could be, for example, you're mounting credit card bills.
Yes.
Okay, now you have that. And what do you say are the emotions that a person usually feels when they have mounting credit card bills?
The emotions are fear to begin with, then guilt, then panic sometimes. They lose sleep. And the emotions, I think that the emotions in that particular case start as physical sensations. And many people have the physical sensation first, and then if they sit still for a little while and just listen to their body, then they will know what they feel. Then they will be able to connect the thoughts with the feelings. There's a theory that says that negative thoughts trigger negative feelings. There's another theory that says negative feelings trigger negative thoughts. In my theory, they feed into each other. So we do not really know what comes first, the thought or the emotion, but they are interdependent and they're always together. So physical sensation, thought, and emotion come together. Then that person takes actions based on what they think. They think, they feel afraid. They say, it's nothing. It's going to go away. They go and continue charging their credit card, or they don't pay their credit card because they're afraid. They're paralyzed. So
would you say that what's really going on is that the person's cognitions is a clue, that the thinking, therefore, is a clue that a sensation or an emotion is denied, that they can't really identify the emotion, that the thinking that happens is really meant to hide the emotion from ourselves. For example, mounting credit card bills, you get both angry and you feel powerless. Rather than feel those things, you feel this kind of aggression, anger inside you, and then you get this thought, I have a right to live without having to be indebted to people, that's the cognition, and the action is, I'll go out and I'll spend a little more money.
Yes.
The result is you get into further debt.
Into further debt, yes.
But the beginning of it is the denial of the emotion.
Correct.
Almost always. Every trigger leads to an emotion. When you can't recognize the emotion and the source of the emotion, that leads to sensations that lead to aversions, which will be cognitions.
Yes.
I'm now going to think about it. See, you really can never trust what you think, you know? I mean, your thinking is always questionable, because thinking is almost always an escape from feelings, so often.
There is a discrepancy, and using the SCAR model, we can go back to the emotion if we start from the results. We can go backwards. We can see the results that we're getting in our life. Then we can connect the results to the actions that we took. And then we can go back and remember the thoughts that informed our actions. Our actions are not really informed by emotions.
You know,
they're
informed
by thoughts.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. You know what's difficult about with that, Maria? It's what I call a gitnip. A gitnip is an expression I made up, which means good in theory, not in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time I get involved in a compulsive action,
mm-hmm.
which is meant as a result of some thought process that's the avoidance of a feeling,
mm-hmm.
I can never go backwards. I'm already caught up in it.
You
it's already
can
gone.
If you repeat it in your life.
And if I have somebody like you guiding me to take me backwards. But it's very hard to do on your own. Because people get caught up, or you get caught up in the thought. If you get up in a caught up in jealousy, for example.
You can, I don't necessarily agree with this. First of all, we learn as we grow older and hopefully wiser about ourselves. So once we become conscious of what we do, we can monitor ourselves. And this is an advanced stage, I guess, of mental and emotional health. But the compulsive behavior, if we want to call it compulsive, or the self-sabotaging behavior, will repeat itself again and again and again. Now, when we reach a point in our life where we're hit with a result that really, really hurts a lot, then we'll take time to think back of what we did to get to that point.
I like that you have movies specifically about self-sabotaging patterns. I'm going to read your list.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's seen these know these. Affliction, for sure. Clean and Sober, Closer by Mike Nichols. Damage by Louis Malle.
Mm-hmm.
Damage is an important movie to you, isn't it? You
yes, it is.
Why is that a great film? Why?
Because it has everything we're talking about. It's about an affair that a very powerful man in politics in England started with his son's fiancée. Because he pursued his sexual fantasies without taking into account what consequences those would have in real life. Secondly, he denied his true feelings. Thirdly, he overlooked his relationship with his son. And fourthly, he denied his own emotions. And he really learned a lesson, of course, after everything was done and said, but he had some real consequences to pay, and his family did as well. And so I do use that film a lot when I work with people who are going through really big moments in their life, when they have, you know, big decisions to make, when they deal with marriages that are rocky or relationships that are rocky, affairs that are active, or they're fantasizing about having an affair. And it is a film that has worked because of how powerful it is. And it's a film about becoming conscious and aware.
And so films, in many ways, are films of... that a film could give you the clue. It could give you, if you can use it. If you just don't sit, it's like music, you know. I mean, music can give you, it can be a clue to yourself, a key to yourself, or music could just be entertainment. It's like drugs, you know. I mean, some people take drugs for experimenting with self. They took LSD to travel their minds. Other people took it to dance.
A movie can be anything from something that will change your life, all the way to something that you are watching as a part of an addiction, or as something that you're watching because you don't have anything else to do, or an escape from reality. It can give you clues, or it can really shake you to making real changes. It all depends not on the movie. I believe it depends on you.
So if the person is sitting there watching a lot of movies, you're saying the following, I think. You're saying, okay, now look, you, if you're a movie junkie and you're somebody who really loves a movie, I'm going to ask you to do a number of things. One thing is I want you to look at all of the characters in the movie, and first, you said one thing before, see mm-hmm. what part of the movie touches you.
Yes.
See if anything makes you have an aversion,
yes.
which is a very important thing when you turn your eyes away.
Yes.
You know, I can't see that part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And see what part really attracts you and fixes you, and then ask yourself where you are in this.
Where
you know, sometimes it's just too painful. Like if a woman feels that she's missing in her love life
mm-hmm.
and she sees a love movie, it's too painful to watch. You would say, no, watch it. Ask yourself the question. Go through the question.
Yes.
Challenge yourself to come out of this.
Yes. This is, I don't believe that anyone has lived a loveless life. What I would help this woman discover is that she does have love in her life, and she has felt love in her life. The fear that most people have is that they don't have love in their life. Nobody loves them. And so the movie is a reminder of that. But by encouraging her to watch the love movie and talk about it afterwards, talk about the movie and talk about how the movie made her feel, I would help this woman discover that, in fact, she does have love in her life and she is loved. And these are the steps that one takes after watching the movie. That's why, again, I repeat, movies should never really be the escape. They should be the way back into life. Into our life.
Maria Grace, you know, part of what happens in movies, of course, one of the beauty of movies is the extraordinary creativity that we get access to.
Yes.
And I think you and I both agree that sometimes we escape our own creativity by focusing on the creativity of others. And I think you would endorse developing your own creativity in a big way. And I know that's a part of your book. How do you dare to be creative? Give me some ideas.
How do you dare to be creative? First of all, I don't believe that creativity is necessarily art. There is creative everything. Everything that is made out of nothing is an act of creativity. And prior to creating, there is imagining. And therefore, you dare be creative once you imagine. So I would go back to the person's imagination. And many people get stuck because they say, oh, I'm not a creative person because I don't draw, I don't paint, I don't write poetry. Well, there are creative ideas, business ideas. There are creative home renovation, remodeling ideas. There's creativity in becoming a better lover. There's creativity in becoming a better parent, a better communicator, a better guardian, a better caretaker, a better anything. And so I would start with that.
So anybody sitting at their desk right this minute, mm-hmm. who's looking at their desk and seeing the way it's arranged, take anything, take any part of it and arrange it in a creative way. Do something unusual. I remember a man who I used to train with who used to say, as a practice, you have to always walk out of your house backwards. And he would say this. He would say, for people who lived in apartments in Manhattan, always leave your door backwards. And why you would walk out backwards is you'd walk out backwards, careful that nobody's behind you, because he wanted you to see the world differently every day. And it was part of his experience. And the part of the experience was to put your socks on a different way, to do something different with your life every moment. If you're about to drink a cup of coffee, instead of just drinking that same coffee with that same hand, try drinking it with no hands.
This is true. We get into ruts. We get into taking things for granted. And especially in this city, it's very easy to get there because we get into this grid, you know, metaphorically and literally speaking. There are films, though, that can inspire us about becoming creative. Remember Working Girl with Melanie Griffith? It was done in New York from the 80s. That is a movie about creativity. It's very entertaining. And it is about this woman who was a secretary from Staten Island and had this very creative idea, and her boss usurped it and presented it as hers, and then the movie shows how she really fought for her creative idea to see it flourish to the end. So that is just one inspirational film about being creative with what you do that does not really have to be art. Being Martha is another movie about creativity and food. Babette's Feast is another movie about creativity and food. And food becomes, cooking becomes the whole process of bringing something to life and sharing it. And this food that is shared and prepared and shared with love somehow transforms the people who eat it. And people love films that have to do with food. That's why I believe there's so much watching of Food Network TV, because we love watching the process of creating something out of nothing.
You know, there's something about the chemistry of watching. When I watch people watching Food Network, I think these are really chemistry people. Chemistry because it's chemistry that manifests into a hard subject, you know, into something like a
chemistry
meal.
Chemistry that becomes alchemy, yes.
Yes, becomes alchemy.
And becomes food.
So in other words, if you like music, join a choir, do something to do with music. Don't be afraid of instruments. Don't be afraid of of having a new instrument that you're learning. You know, try something different, even if it's no matter what it is, just to get yourself back on the creative bent.
And allow yourselves to do. A creative habit is a habit that allows you to make mistakes and have fun with them. So allow yourself to make mistakes and learn from them and have fun with them. And when the critic is removed, then we can become creative.
That's certainly true. And it is certainly true that if you have... That the critic will stop you in so many ways on each turn. And it's nice to be able to have nobody to account to but yourself. So if you do something creative, don't have somebody watching over your shoulder who's going to tell you whether it's a good thing or not a good thing. Just do it for you.
We have to stop the critic before the critic stops us. And another thing about a creative habit and creativity is that it gives us energy. So anything that gives us energy and makes us feel like little kids that we can play is a good thing to do creatively.
My guest is Maria Grace, PhD, and her website is Maria. It's mariagrace.com.
Mariagrace.com, M-A-R-I-A-G-R-A-C-E .com.
Mariagrace.com. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. The name of the book, Real Fulfillment. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Here's some Cal Jada for you.
Thank you, Armand.
I'm Gemma Owens, and you're listening to WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.